We have a couple of case studies. The person who gave me the case study for them isn't in here, so we might start with yours. Mm-hmm. So we're going to work through a couple of cases from actually people in the room that have come up and brought stuff to us, and then we'll have some time for questions. Kirsten had a correction that she wanted to make from something that was some feedback that she got in the break.
So not a correction, but I just want to be very clear. So I talked about EMDR a little bit yesterday. That I have no problems with EMDR, okay? Does everybody hear me? I have no problems with EMDR. I've actually had EMDR done and found it very helpful for that situation that I shared with you.
And so, I do EMDR, yeah. So I have no problem with EMDR.
And I have no problem with Greg.
EMDR is.
Yeah, so eye movement desensitization
reprocessing.
Thank you. And I personally call it magical juju.
I think
that'll play really well.
I don't do magical juju. Just to be clear.
I just think it was super effective for me, and I think even they don't exactly know all of why it's effective, but it is effective. It can be very effective. And so what I would just say is I want to close the door of I'm not saying that EMDR is not good. I think it can be it is very effective and can be very helpful. And as biblical counselors, sometimes I think our own anxiety anxiety about a counselee not making movement or really suffering and you don't know what to do, you can just shuffle them off to Buffalo quickly. And I would just say, be careful that you're doing that for their good and not out of your own extremis, okay? And talk dialogue with them about that. And then I just met this lovely lady up here who told me her name, and now I can't even remember it again, Allison. And she does that, and she is in a state that allows her to do that without being licensed. I'm not in a state that allows me to do that without being licensed. So across state lines, it's always hard because I have counselees across the United States. So now I have somebody who I know is biblical, as I know Greg is, because I do think that's important, and does EMDR. So I just want to make sure nobody goes away mad at me or hurt or whatever. I love everybody, and we're all one big family of God, and we're all going to be at the banquet table, as far as I can tell.
I'm going to hire.
All right.
Oh, yeah. That's another story.
Thanks.
And I did EMDR one time as part of a trauma training. I did not get to the EMDR part because I fell asleep during Safe Touch, and no one woke me up.
Probably just as well.
Yes.
All right.
I woke up like this.
We're going to present a couple of cases, and then we're going to have a little time. We're going to kind of bat those around, and then we'll have time for some Q&A, I hope, afterwards. Time is always at a premium in these things. There are so many great questions here. Know that we'll linger as much as we can at the end.
I can't, but...
Kirsten can't because she's got a flight to catch, I'm sure.
Yep.
Yes. But we'll do our best to answer those questions. All right. So here's a case. Again, this is from someone in the group who is counseling a couple. The wife definitely is from a church. Her background is from a church that would have been in Chris's cult category. There is abuse going on.
I'm glad you said category, or else it would be Chris's cult.
Yeah, Chris's cult. Yeah. No.
She's part of my cult.
Yeah. Right.
No, we are.
Yeah. I'm in Chris's cult.
Welcome to the Chris cult.
But this cult, this Chris's cult doesn't do abuse.
No.
We do report abuse. This cult church did not report abuse. Is that fair?
Didn't report it, but it was going on.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Her family is still a big influence to the point that the couple, they've been married 12 years, is talking about divorce. Both of them are talking about divorce about because of her family, because of their undue influence on him. So anything else you want to add to the case?
On her as well.
On her, yes.
His issue is they're still controlling her. And she,
right.
There's days when she would rather submit to her family than to him.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Because it's a very patriarchal dominant culture.
Yeah. So how to help this sweet couple who is to the point of, like, considering divorce because of her family that is in this very abusive system. Go. Who has thoughts on that?
Well, my hope is that they each have their own counselor right now.
Yeah, it was my
And so that...
The husband and the wife.
Yeah. That they each have their own counselor, because I still want to know more about the husband even.
Yeah.
So is there a jockeying for control? And she feels caught. You know, because we also, if we're particularly in the reformed arena, we have our own thoughts and feelings about submission, et cetera, that can have a wide range of application. Yep.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, I spent a year with this situation.
Okay.
And they did have different counselors, and the problem became because the two counselors thought differently.
Yeah.
The two counselors couldn't agree on
right.
And did they talk to each other, or? Okay, yeah. Okay.
They just didn't agree.
Not initially, because only one was being counseled, and then eventually the husband got involved.
Okay.
In a separate interaction with a separate counselor.
And they didn't
and
see it.
To come together, but that was tough.
And how did the two counselors see it, just out of curiosity?
Well, one was like, you need to reconcile with your family to the wife.
Okay.
And the husband's like, that's going to drive us to divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And they had past history of a previous counselor in a different state that had enabled them to establish healthy boundaries with the family, which seemed to be working.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
His thought was, why are we not going back to something like that?
Yeah.
So there's a principle right there that I think is important for us to talk about, which is there are some relationships that are not reconcilable.
Right.
And so, you know, even Paul's admonition in Romans 12 is be at peace with everybody as much as it depends on you. But it doesn't, you know, always depend solely on you. In fact, a lot of times it doesn't. And so... So that counsel was not helpful. The counsel of, like, you have to reconcile with your family, even when, like, your present family, your leave and cleave family with your husband, is now in jeopardy because of the force, the influence that they're having on you.
Well, that's the two opinions, right?
Right.
Right.
The wife's like, oh, yeah, I want
well,
to reconcile with my family.
Mine's right.
And the husband's like, yeah.
And would the wife say she has grounds for divorce? And is there a pastor that's overseeing this, or are you the pastor?
I don't. That's a good question. There's two pastors involved.
Okay.
I'm one of them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we're trying to work this together.
Yeah.
Okay.
And two pastors from two.
No, we're both together.
Okay, same church. Okay.
Yeah, same church. Okay. And do you see it the same way, you two pastors?
That's a good question.
So I think you guys might have to get together and figure that out and shepherd your people.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then I would just say, you know, I'm just thinking about the church context that I'm in. I think there would be frank conversation with each of them of whether they or not they had grounds for divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying what I think about that, all right? I'm just saying those conversations have to happen. And elders do have an obligation. I'm assuming you guys have some type of a marriage commitment that you, or covenant, membership covenant.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And so I think that works. And I'm just wondering, what's your process for shepherding them?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let's reveal the problem in our counseling ministry that we've allowed this two
to happen.
Separate camps
to form.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
So that's problem number one, and that's what we're working on. We're
right.
Yeah.
Very good.
How are we going to bring that together? So that's ongoing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, to your question, I don't think there are any grounds for divorce from two biblical reasons.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They end up just getting so tired of the conflict is the reason they're like, I just can't keep it.
Yeah, I can't do
which
this.
May be why Counselor B is pursuing reconciliation, because it seems like the most biblical path.
Right.
And maybe the discussion of it's the most biblical path with the most resistance. So what would degrees of reconciliation look like as far as the relationship we can have due to their sin? Right? Because there are certain relationships that can continue, but they're not going to continue the same.
Yeah.
And they say it to abusive men all the time. It's like, I know you want your marriage restored, but you may have forfeited that. In fact, you may have forfeited your freedom. You might be going to jail, right? So let's deal with what you can actually
right.
do,
right?
You know, correctly and faithfully. And maybe that's a conversation for Counselor B, is your heart's in the right place, but pragmatically, there's probably other options here we need to consider.
Yep.
And of course, if the husband's pro-boundary and the wife can be, I don't want to say persuaded, but at least have a conversation about boundaries, that seems to be, to me, the winner. It's like,
yeah.
we don't want to sever ties with your family of origin.
He's not even asking for that.
Yeah, I would assume he just wants it to be safe.
Right.
Yeah, yep. And I think that's where we can all get on board and say we want safety as well.
And I think for you, so I'd want you two elders to be really in lockstep. And I think the principal, and this is, I would say 85% of the marriage counseling I do is because people do not leave their families of origin.
Yes.
They do it geographically, but mm-hmm. not emotionally, spiritually,
yep.
mentally, psychologically,
especially
all
the
things.
Especially if they have grown up in abusive
right.
systems like that.
And so I think that if counselor B or whichever A or B, whichever one is, right, like if that counselor is actually biblical, as the elders, I think you can go to that counselor and say, what do you do with this in Genesis here?
Yeah.
This leave your family.
Right.
Because I think that if you're calling yourself a biblical counselor and you're not encouraging your counselee to do that, she is supposed to, that's the big thing.
Primary family relationship now.
Right, it's yes. this thing, right? And so we all like to moralize the family cultures. This, the way that we do Christmas is the best, right? And it's
well,
like,
some of us do it really well.
Yeah.
Right.
right? But no, you guys come together and some of that you're going to leave on the ground and some you're going to create. And that's maybe what that counselor isn't. That's biblical, right? Is not getting, and for you to be able to help it now.
Ironically, even in Jesus' teaching, I mean, we make such a big deal in evangelicalism about the family, the nuclear family, family of origin, or whatever. Jesus is always talking about the family of God.
Right.
He's
right.
saying, this is my family, talking about the disciples and the people right. who are following. You know, and he's saying things like, let the dead bury their own dead, and those kinds of things. Now, again, I'm not saying that that's what this calls for, but what I'm saying is it is important that they have a biblical view of like the way that God looks at family.
Yeah.
And she has grown up in a system that just has a very, very unbiblical one. The other thing that I would say is that given that you're saying they don't have biblical grounds for divorce, I do think it would be really important to say, hey, let's use language like, I can't keep doing this anymore,
yeah.
instead of language like, I have to get a divorce.
This is
right.
the only,
right.
We often make false dichotomies,
right?
It's either
yes.
it comes together perfectly or we have to divorce.
Right.
What's the in-between here
right.
that can be explored?
Yes. Yes. Question. Yeah.
That would be different,
that
yeah,
would be different. Yeah.
than what he's saying is
that's
going
right.
on here.
That's right.
Yeah.
But that's a good
yeah.
point. We don't
yeah.
we don't get that sense at all. But yes, that's
right.
in this case. But yeah, that's right. That's
yeah.
a good point.
And I think one last thing, I know in churches I've been involved in that where a marriage has just irretrievably broken down, there has been a place of like, and I think you have to walk it all out, but there has been a place where the elders have given space for that just because everything has been tried.
Yeah.
And so if anything is done with the church, it's like with comment. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to. Oh,
yep.
Was there a question over here?
There was one over there.
You were talking about yesterday, how does it apply with what you said? And I really liked it, but in this situation, how can you take what you have to your advantage to use it to serve other people?
Oh, like, yeah. So for that's more for like people who are in position of authority, right? So I would say the husband needs to use his advantages to love his wife and to care for her and to listen to her and support her. I want to, I feel like with marriage, it's, I don't know, like the things going through my mind about this case is I want to see an incident report of the things that have been done in that church and in those parents against her and against maybe against both of them. And is there alignment in this couple on like these are the sins we've suffered? And is there discrepancies? Like, well, yeah, they've done this, and then the husband sees more sin than the wife sees. So is there an incident report, like cataloging when things happened and how severe they were? And can that incident form then like inform the boundaries so the that are set? Yep. So that's where my mind is going.
So if you have connections to like an advocate, and I know this may not be considered abuse, although the parental relationship has a different dynamic to it that we could qualify in some ways. Having an advocate, a trained advocate, who's not necessarily providing counsel, but is providing resources, can be tremendously beneficial to your team for that very thing. So a lot of our advocates that we're connected to are much better at receiving disclosures and processing that information so you can have an effective report and gathering what we call a victim impact statement, which helps us understand in narrative form what has happened and how the person experiences it. And that allows you then to get some of those key footholds, as opposed to sometimes when you're in a room with somebody who's been traumatized, you guys know this, it's like meeting with an auctioneer. We were at Joe T. Garcia's the other night, and there was an auction happening somewhere. And I was like, hey, there's just so much going on. It's nice to have a help with somebody who is accustomed to the auctioneer and can say, okay, point A is this, point B is this, point C is this. Now, Chris,
and
go.
Lastly, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, if you go to my resources thing, it's not the QR code, but it's on the website. I have like a stewarding and abusive parent relationship that I go through with couples, and I actually write out what I recommend the boundaries should be, because we've had a lot of that with immigrant parents wanting to control their adult children and control their marriages. And so, so that's something I think there can be a plan in place for that.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that the counselor for the husband, you know, I always say the hardest things in the world, in my mind, would be to be a husband or an elder. And so I would just say what, for him, like where are the places he might have to die to himself as Christ died for us while we were yet sinners with his wife, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he feels like he has, and it's also kind of self-centered.
Right, right.
Yeah, so.
Right.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the question I would be asking in this situation is, where does the wife stand in her cult recovery? So how much of this is fear-based, that her husband's headship is not covering her directly in the blood of Christ, because maybe she has a misunderstanding of how our sanctification of Christ works in the woman's actual relationship with the Holy Spirit, and maybe she fears that she's not receiving the sanctification
Yeah, that's really good. And along with the incident report that Tim talked about, so if you do have that list of hurts, ways that they've hurt, that's where some of this stuff is going to come out. If she hasn't done any work that she still needs to do in terms of like trauma recovery work, and part of that is going to be the grieving of like the ways that they have been hurt. And I think a lot of times, the I can't do this anymore, the I'm at the end of my rope, is a lot of times a response to, like, I just have all these hurts and I haven't had a chance to really even grieve them. And so grieving those together would be good.
And so it would be important for her to have a counselor that actually understands this stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And her husband also be able to understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So let's jump into a second question. I'm going to preserve anonymity here, so I'm going to present it as a case, and then the team, and then we'll invite you guys as well into it. So the scenario is an elder-led church. So that's our dynamic, is we're dealing with an elder-led church. It sounds like a smaller elder board, which actually encourages me, because I feel like sometimes in our world, we're so driven by being elder-led, we push people who aren't qualified into that position. So a smaller elder board, they're considering, or had been considering, a new candidate for the elder board, but they paused that candidacy because of some theological concerns. So you with me? Again, I'm like, good job. Good job, guys. We've got some theological concerns. We can't move forward. I don't know if there was homework assigned or a process after that, but the candidate did not respond well. The candidate responded with accusations of spiritual abuse against the existing elders. It sounds like there was some hurt related to not being approved, okay? There's probably some more there, but among the accusations were building of coalitions. So now I'm going to others. The spreading of the accusation, and it's led to some folks leaving the church. And so now the elders, the existing elders, are faced with the reality of losing congregants, dealing with division, and trying to preserve, right, the process and not be meanies, is how I'm reading it, okay? but sometimes you got to be a little bit of a meanie.
Yeah.
Can I clarify one thing?
Yeah.
When you say the coalitions, which way are the accusations going there?
Toward the existing elder board. No, the candidate is building the coalition
is making allies
against the existing elder board. So we call them flying monkeys sometimes from the Wizard of Oz, right? It's like, my monkeys will now do my bidding, right? And so that is the accusation of spiritual abuse is actually being used as a tactic of spiritual abuse is how it's being presented, okay? So the elder candidate's behavior has also raised red flags among caregivers and helpers within the church. So we have helpers within the church that want to do a few things, and this behavior has raised some red flags. So here's my questions to the panel and to us. How do we as the helpers best support and advise the existing elders in their confusion and frustration, right, of having these accusations against them and losing members of the congregation? Two, how do we address this individual, the individuals who've left, the congregants who are walking away and being drawn in, the monkeys, flying monkeys? How do we also care for the elder candidate's family, and in particular his wife, because his behavior towards the elder board is revealing patterns that lead us to believe, based on other things we've witnessed, that he may be practicing the same type of coercion at home? So now we as the helpers in a limited capacity are looking for, A, how do we support our existing elders who are being accused of abuse or advise them? How do we address the individuals who have left and are being, we believe, manipulated? And then three, how do we care for the candidate's wife and family?
How big is the scandal? Like, is it like widely known, you know, or is it like?
It seems like it's big enough, right, that it's beginning to affect the community at large, mm-hmm. but it has been primarily about this particular group. There sounds like there's folks from maybe the outside or folks who care that are coming alongside to lock arms.
But it's not on social media or anything like
not
that.
Not that I'm aware.
Okay.
I mean, we can do that. If somebody would like to tweet it out. Please don't do that. Please don't do that.
I'll just be leaving. Yes.
Yes. At least,
so
yes.
The families involved, there was community involved, they were under the elders' care.
Even if it wasn't a local community, it could be a broader community that is already intertwined. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a responsibility for the elder board to care for this person and the family. It's not somebody who was outside coming in as a candidate.
Of them.
Yes.
Of them.
Yes.
Right. So with that, I think there would be an outside party invited in to do mediation to see, hey, these are the accusations. This is my viewpoint. That's their viewpoint. Let's look at it biblically. Let's address it. And hopefully bring about some consensus of what the actual problem was, of what the actual accusation was of spiritual abuse. And then if it's being revealed that this person is more of the spiritual abuser in his home, then there's church discipline, there's church care, there's...
There's an interesting biblical dilemma that I will not prescribe, but I will throw out there to make things muddier. If the case as presented is an accurate depiction of what's happening, our church discipline process has moved away from Matthew 18 into Titus. Mm-hmm. Because we're dealing with a divisive person who's intentionally divided the church.
Yes.
So now, if that's an accurate depiction, right, which I appreciate what you're saying, as an elder, I may, and this is painful. When Kirsten talks about it being hard to be an elder, my thought process here is I would rather, let's do everything we can to reconcile. Right. But the calling is, I think we need to talk. If we need advice, maybe it's from other elders and other churches to help us process it. But I think this is time for a warning that's delivered personally about his divisiveness.
And very particularly.
Very specifically.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, let me throw another little wrench
in the...
So another concern is that on the part of the people counseling...
Everyone.
Everybody. is that they're afraid, right? They're concerned. Yep. They're not afraid. They're concerned with good reason that this person could be behaving the same way in the home. So potentially this person not only is a divisive person in the church, but also an abusive person in the home. And so...
Could be really dangerous.
So that's where we have to proceed with real caution. I would argue, but feel free to push back. I would argue that if we have any legitimate reason to think that this person might be abusive in their home, I think we need to try to figure that piece out.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd start with a safety plan for the wife.
Yeah,
and just no matter what, and like just so that if anything does happen,
right.
She has a plan.
Yeah,
and then
so maybe a team. We're not going to build a team on.
Yeah.
Why would we do that?
We can handle this all ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think Greg is right, and I think you're right, and I think.
No, I'm wrong.
The other thing that I would just say is that, you know, when Chris first read us the thing, we were like, well, number one, that elder board has been saved from a lot of trouble, probably more if they would have, you know, brought him on. Yeah. So praise God for that.
Way to see the grace of that, you know? Yeah. That really.
You know, that's the thing that I keep saying, abuse work, this is why I tell pastors all the time, this is one of the ways that God purifies his church, right? There are wolves in the church, and they're destroying families, and we're all about families in the next generation, right? Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's hard, yes, it's tricky and all of that, but this is a grace of the Lord.
Yeah.
And so that leads me to just say, like, if we, as we read this, we all kind of at the table were like, this guy is abusive. Even if it's only that he got, you know, paused. He didn't even get turned down. He got paused. Mm-hmm. And this is his reaction, mm-hmm. right? Now we see fruit here. And that fruit needs to go somewhere.
Bad fruit.
Right? Yep, bad fruit. And that fruit needs to go somewhere. And so I think the ways that everybody has talked about it, I agree with Titus. We are so jiggy about that, but it actually is out of love, right? Mm-hmm. This guy is on a really bad path, and we do not want to escort him to hell, do we? Right?
So if we were processing this in a room, so if our team, I'm going to speak for us and you guys correct.
Oh, can I say one more thing?
Oh, please.
And see if you guys agree, but if you do have if we do think there's a possibility he's an abusive person, or we are sure that he is, mediation never works with abusive guys.
Right.
So now you've just empowered him even more because he's got everybody spinning around.
That's right.
And that will exhaust an elder board and cause such dissension in the church, the likes of which you've never seen.
That's why there needs to be a priority on kind of getting a good handle on this guy and
his, right.
you know, like what he is doing in the home and other, because if he is an abusive, divisive person, you're going to have to go to Titus, and mediation is probably not going to be helpful.
Right.
And we want to make sure
it's like marriage counseling.
Plan and all those kinds of things.
Yeah. I would probably line it up if we were in the room as a team and see if the guys agree with this. We had a whiteboard. Greg brought up priorities. I'd probably want to say, let's go through our priorities as an elder team. Number one, prayer is the first work. Remember Kirsten, day one? So it's not the only work, but it's the first work. So we want to make sure that we go to prayer, and our prayer concerns are going to be, Lord, search our hearts, reveal anything that may be true about what was said.
Right?
Right? And we're going to confess that, and in unity we're going to come back then to our second priority after prayer, or in prayer, which is safety, right, and conviction of sin. So, and maybe some other things, but we're going to pray. And then we're going to prioritize what needs to happen. And so for us, we can put them in any order, but I do think, how do we get a safety plan in place based on our concerns? How do we march faithfully towards Titus 3 or Titus 2, I can't remember the address, the warning stage safely? Because we believe that is the step, but we're going to put lines in the sand on the way. Is that fair?
Yeah,
and I would want that written out well so the elders have their priorities.
And safety plan, not just necessarily for the wife, but for anybody else who happens to be in this guy's
place.
Yes. So kids and anybody, any other people in the church. Yes, question.
So what if the wife doesn't really doesn't
know what's happening to her?
Hasn't been made aware or hasn't accepted?
Yeah.
Let's just say she hasn't verbally accepted that she's in an abusive marriage.
Right.
So she's partnering with her husband.
Sure. Yeah, colluding, right? Yeah.
Because she's being a good wife.
Yeah.
Right.
So I would think the question, how do you engage that safety plan to a woman that
doesn't want a safety plan?
I'm not being abused.
Right.
Yeah.
So what is the step there?
Yeah.
Talking about that.
Yeah, so I do think in building our team, we and the elders probably can't do the work all ourselves. So in building our team, we're going to want to develop partners with people who can do various works. And I do think approaching the wife, based on our concerns that we have here, is probably our first goal. So let's say we bring in Kendra or another advocate from Call to Peace, and we have a discussion about our concerns, and Kendra is able to set up a meeting with her. She may deny. She may say, there's no problem here. I don't want anything to do with you. Well, at least Kendra can come back to us and say, this is what we tried. This is what we attempted. These are the resources that I offered. My guess is, and you guys correct me, if we engage something like that and Kendra comes back and gives us that we were rejected, now we're going to move pretty quickly in our next phase, because once she tells him, it's all hell's going to break.
Yeah, now you've just lit the fire.
Yeah,
and I would just say the thing that we can do, I see that hand, $5, you can be saved.
Don't tarry!
You know, so if Kendra works with her and she's just like not, now that's not the end of the story in terms of that white woman is going to walk away and start thinking.
So
I think that we can still, as an elder board and like in my role at my church, say, well, let's just have a plan ready, whether she wants it or not. Sometimes I'll say to a woman, if I'm the one doing the, you know, that kind of work, I'll say to her, how about if we come up with the plan and I'll make you a deal? If we never use it, I have to take you out to a meal, to your whatever restaurant you want. And if we end up using it, you eventually have to take me out. And
I'll still take you out.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, I get that plan. But then we can actually, even if she won't, we can make the plan in the church side to say, if she calls on a dime, we've got the card, the Visa card that's for the hotel. We've got clothes for her, whatever.
Right. That's really. I think too, recognizing who your enemies are and your enemies aren't.
Yeah.
So if the wife doesn't accept our help, doesn't mean that she is the primary player here. It's an old law enforcement language, primary aggressor. The same is true for the monkeys, flying monkeys.
Yeah.
Like, I want a path of restoration for the people who are colluding, treating them as people who were deceived, not as people who were, right? So I'm really looking at ground zero.
Yeah. And this is why, just in teamwork, and I'd be interested in what you guys think, but really thinking about people's strengths can be super helpful too as you're building a team. So I have the strengths finders for me has a positive negative. I tend to look at my strengths as weaknesses because they're the places I'll go to before I pray or go to the Lord.
Yep.
But they also are strengths. So I have connectedness. Very few of our elders have that, which is why they like me around. I can see these dots. I think of cases as Seurat paintings. Seurat was an impressionist, but he was a pointillist. Dot, 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 dot. I'm always collecting dots, watching for the picture to emerge. right? I'm the one that they call me the pothole queen. I'm the one that sees all the potential potholes or real potholes, and so that I can say, she doesn't want a safety plan, we're still going to do one.
Yeah, because I'll drive right into the bottle.
Yeah, yeah. That's that catastrophic imagination. I see, yeah. Yes.
Which we don't have.
I have it in spades, right. And that's why you elders do okay.
That's right. Question here.
I have another wrench.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Please.
Please. We love wrenches.
So I think one of my questions might be, and you know, you guys have the context for this actual situation, is what if it's both and? Mm-hmm. Like you have a candidate who's not at all qualified to be an elder, but also he discovered that these guys are all just yes men, mm-hmm. and they don't want him because he's going to rock the boat. And so you have both and. And so in which case, like, you could end up dismissing, like, a systemic pervasive
sure.
problem. You've got both.
Yeah, part of your issue is then who do you appeal to? And that's information that we don't have. And
right.
So if it was in my context, I can say that, being a CMA pastor, pastoring a Baptist church. Clear context, right?
Sure.
So if my church has a concern as an autonomous church, they know that I still have authority. That's a gimmick for me. I would not pastor an autonomous church without a system of authority above me. So they know that if there's a conflict like that, a potential, he said, we don't know what to do, they're to call my district superintendent.
And then he sets
up the mediation that begins with investigation.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's absolutely right. And I think, secondly, if the story would have been that he really did have genuine concerns and he tried to entreat them, they wouldn't listen, and then he went to the next step, I'd be all good with that.
Yeah.
But the way that the story was told, that he handled it, to me, if I went up to Tim and I said, Tim, you really hurt me, and you said this thing, I know that Tim would go, I want to consider that. Let me think about that. And then he would consider it and either come back and say, the Lord has not convicted me in my conscience right now, or you know what, I did. That to me is the fruit of the heart. When somebody goes and starts making allies, it's just, and you're on track to be an elder? That's...
Well, in a lot of ways, if the scenario is accurate as presented, he is becoming an elder.
Right.
Yeah. Right, by attrition. It's like, I will be an elder. Right. Like, I will set myself up as the Most High. Like, that's where I get...
Lucifer.
I get really scared.
But you're right. It can be. Even in marriage, you know, domestic abuse, right? Like, you can have a both and there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And sometimes it's often reactive, but sometimes two broken people have come together. Wow. And we do have to have a category for that. Yeah.
I would want to know if he would be willing to sit down and talk about his concerns about these other elders, right? If he can say, like... Because he just went on the warpath rather than, like, actually, it didn't sound like he was actually wanting to talk about his concerns in an environment that actually would benefit the church. So
kind of situation
where
it's like he tried to talk and shut down.
Right. So
it's like it.
Yeah. So I feel like I would still have to go with the negative fruit I can see, yeah. Right, versus the one I can't see. But if he's willing to talk, like, you know, if I was one of those elders, I would want to say, like, can we dial this back and can I hear your concerns? I might not share the same conclusions, but I'm really open to sharing your concerns. I want to grow. And that's what I would hope someone would do.
I think, Tim, the pause, the push and the pause button came over theological differences.
Yeah.
So, and here's an interesting piece, and I can only equate myself for a second, because I mentioned a second ago that I'm CMA, but I pastor a Baptist church. So when we merged the churches, we agreed to become Baptist as long as I could keep my CMA credentials. Well, here's the deal. I don't govern and lead and function in that church like a CMA pastor. It's Baptist governance. Now, half my board didn't know what Baptist governance was. I had to teach them Baptist polity, even though I'm not Baptist. But it's important. I thought it was important for me not to bring Pentecostal light, same Holy Spirit, less filling, into the Baptist church.
Right.
Instead, actually pastor them effectively the way they're governed.
I'm
if
so
that makes
glad
sense.
This is taped, aren't so, you?
Same so Holy Spirit, less filling.
Yes, yeah, so I bring that back to what Tim is saying in order to say this. I think if I'm an elder candidate and the established doctrine is different than my own, I either conform
yes!
in order to serve, right?
Right.
or I step away.
There's five other churches.
I don't try to force them into a new category, right?
Okay, but there's a lot of questions. Yeah.
Throw two more wrenches.
Okay.
Okay, two more. Throw them over here. I'm hurt.
Let's say elders say, we want to go get help from another church,
yeah.
Other pastors, other elders, and that action is seen as gossip and slander. And two, as your point, I disagree with you, now there's an accusation of unrepentant sin. Mm-hmm.
So, that would be, it'd be nice to have other pastors in the room, I think, because disagreement is not unrepentant sin. Disagreement is disagreement. Generally speaking, right?
Yes.
And seeking help is always a good thing.
Right.
And that the context of help actually eliminates the gossip and slander category because you can structure the process for help. Maybe. Yeah, and that pastor's got to deal with them. Yeah, that's right.
And I'll just say that is very common with people who have abusive tendencies or whatever. Gossip and slander is always a thing they say, and I find almost always a thing they do.
Yes, yes, of course.
Right? So if you Google my name, it's not pretty out there.
Right. I'm not pointing fingers, but that's because you're a problem.
Yeah. That's
K-I-R-S-T-E-N, yes.
Umlaut.
Okay,
we
got some hands up. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So how do you, and it's going to be a lot, you're talking to the elders, their families, friendships broken.
Yeah.
Like, where do you enter into that piece of suffering for a church that really has now seen probably a brother they've known?
Yeah.
And there's just the shock and then also just the settling of hurt and sadness.
Yeah.
And
I would love to, like, the idea of bringing another pastor or two in to help facilitate church health,
yep.
if I could just give them Tim for a little bit.
Yes.
Because I actually think Tim is very well skilled at this. Uh-huh. Could you imagine someone like Tim coming in and just leading that church through lament and grief and loss and how much healing that would bring and then how inviting that would be for those people that left to kind of contemplate and go, well, maybe I should not have left. You think they would welcome me back?
Yeah.
And all we've been doing is preparing the people to welcome them back. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'll tell you who really gets forgotten is staff.
Yeah.
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 So that, you know, in a church I was involved in, went through some pretty significant deep and public waters. That's something that was really focused on was the church had to put in the budget for counseling for staff and other people who needed it in the church. You know, one of the campuses had a counseling ministry, so people could get there easily. But you're absolutely right. And it takes, I think also having, for you elders, like the long view, that this is a 2 to 5 year healing process.
It does point out the importance of like what we're doing here, equipping people for the ministry, the
it's
personal
super
ministry
important.
Of the word. Because, like, this church and its staff and its leaders and its members could easily keep a local counseling center busy
for
a
long
quite
time.
A while,
yeah.
You know, or a counseling ministry like Tim runs at his church. You know, and so it's important. This highlights the importance of the ministry that you have as a counseling pastor who is like doing that in the local church.
Well, I would say, I would want to consider group care. There's other things I would be thinking about on that whiteboard that Chris was talking about as elders, like what are our priorities? What are the things we're going to do to shepherd people? Like what is the scope of the pain? How far is this sin gone in terms of knowledge and impact? And I would just want to continue to adjust and shepherd the people. But like Kirsten said, like it is God's grace that as when one member suffers, the whole body suffers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a good thing. We're feeling this together, and it's going to draw us to Christ together. Mm-hmm. So I think we can keep coming back to Him, and He'll be our stability in the midst of what feels like chaos.
Yeah, let's go. I saw a hand back here.
I just want to take it back to the wife for just a second, because I think it's worth noting that if she gets Kendra, even if she's not ready to disclose or she doesn't even recognize yet, she will then at least have a point
person
to go back to, because how often is the holdup that a woman thinks she won't be believed, so that's why she doesn't go forward.
Yep. Right.
So I love your question and just want to know.
So the elders
takes away a giant barrier.
Yes.
Yeah, and can you see that the elders then build trust with the congregation that they have done that?
This is a safe place to discuss.
Yep. And elders will tend towards fear, actually, of like, we are so afraid that this might give ideas to the congregation. And and don't, you know, I would just say to you elders, your women, 95% of them are bought in on what you're preaching from the pulpit. I want that husband who does nightly devotions with our family, is covering our family, supports us, encourages. They are bought in. All right, they're not the women out there in the world. They're not the women out there in mainline. And I keep hearing our women being talked to as if they're those women.
Yep.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're these women. Right. They are bought in. They will stay longer than we want them to.
Yep. Okay, we got one question back here, and then I'm going to switch it to general Q&A just because we got about 15 minutes left. Yes. Okay.
One of the folks that I work closely with that you may or may not be on board, okay? But I think Leslie Vernick's work on staying well and leaving well is about the best that we have. And one of the reasons why I like the terminology is if you're going to stay, stay well, and that would involve boundaries and understanding the harm that's happened to you. And so I'm a big fan of, if this is the choice that you're making, I would love for you to make informed choices. Right? I used to say to my kids, make good choices. And now I say, make informed choices. They may not make good ones. So, and victims often have a series of undesirable choices. Every choice has a negative consequence. And so staying might be a victim's best option in some ways, especially if there's family connections, money connections. That's why staff get caught up in a lot of things, because it's their livelihood. So if you stay, stay well. And then look for strategic ways to stay well.
Yep.
Okay. Let's open it up to other questions.
Ah, there's so many things.
Right there, yeah. How about going with you, since we've just...
Yeah. So on the grief part of the process, I'm so happy that lament is actually in the vocabulary of many evangelicals and conservative Christians these days. And something I've noticed, that I've been in the Old Testament a lot, and I noticed like the there's a lot in lament. There's obviously the Psalms and weeping, but there's also wailing, sackcloth, ashes, and tearing of the clothes, which I don't really picture that happening here, but I think that I felt the need to, like, wail, and I can never find a place to wail.
Yeah.
I live by the beach, and I'm like, I'm going to start a wailing ministry.
I have an answer for this.
So confusing. You can't really spell it. tons of people showing up. Wailing?
I think I have a new ministry, Dawn. Yeah.
No. In your practices, how do you create space for like loud?
Yeah.
Like when the anger comes and the deep grief comes and you just want to be like loud.
Yeah.
Maybe drop a few F-bombs.
F-bombs. Yes. Again, so glad we're being taped right now.
That's funny. F and wailing ministry.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so obviously, like if you have an office in an office building or whatever, you can't invite your counselee to wail there. But I honestly feel like usually we can find a place. It's the invitation, it's the permission that's so important. So I remember during this time in our church where we were going off the rails or whatever, the counselor that I was seeing brought this up, and I was like, that is crazy. She's like, I want you to do it until your voice is raw. And she actually went through like if you need to put a pillow over your face, and you know that will make you feel a bit safer about it. If you need to go out, drive out to a lake where you know nobody is, whatever. But she really kind of walked me through the steps, what it would feel like in my body, and really encouraged, like, I know this is supremely uncomfortable for you, but would you try it? Would you just try it? And I think that that can be super helpful. So I did actually drive my car to a lake, and I did bring a pillow just in case somebody were to drive up and I didn't want anything untoward to happen. So, and I did, I just screamed into that pillow. And I would say, honestly, like, it wasn't the best therapeutic thing I ever did, EMDR, but it was helpful. And I think it was mostly helpful to somebody say, this is worth wailing over.
Yes. Now that's a winner. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. This is worth wailing over. And if I were you, I would wail about this.
Yeah.
So.
Kendra?
And just to sort of go off of that, if a woman is in an abusive situation, it's covert.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know what's going on for a couple of decades.
Right.
And she finally realizes, oh, this was intentional and a choice.
Yeah. Sinister.
And this person who promised to love, honor, cherish me. Mm-hmm. No, they made these choices, and she discovers that, and the weight of that comes to rest on her.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The anger stage can be uncomfortably long and loud.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Yep.
You had a hand up, too.
Yeah. I have a question related to escalation of accountability.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I tried to write it out.
I like that phrase.
That's a great phrase.
Escalation of accountability.
Working on it. So.
I can tell. That's great.
Catastrophic imagination.
So there's two situations that I am involved in. Both involve a senior pastor. The situations have two different church polity. So one's SBC, one is PCA. Where the system above them has demonstrated a devotion to protecting the pastor. In one situation, the senior pastor assaulted someone in a counseling session.
Okay.
In the other situation, there was a pattern of denying abuse, protecting and elevating the abusers, and then shaming the women out of the church. And then the people who tried to bring it to their attention were then smashed, you know, retaliation.
Yeah.
So can you offer wisdom to people who are asking, we're wondering if they're called to take something farther in escalation. So that could mean, like, there have been questions about to other elders, you know, to the presbytery, to the something larger than a presbytery, or even like going to a media. You know, there's a lot of blogs, there's a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, there's Sons of Patriarchy, Julie Roy's,
right.
etc. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I do. I appreciate Julie's work. I really appreciate Sons of Patriarchy. I think Sons of Patriarchy are devoted primarily to the Creekers and some of the Orthodox Presbyterian work. Julie sometimes goes hard, fast, a little harder and faster than I'm accustomed to. I will drop a name. I think Christianity Today actually does a pretty good job in managing some of this, and Kate Schwartz in particular is a very wise reporter on that. But as far as escalation, one of the dilemmas that you have is if the presbytery, which would be the PCA polity, is protecting either the one who committed assault or the one protecting abuse, then you might be able to go above them, but it is very difficult. The SBC, the dilemma with the SBC is the autonomy that the Baptist churches hold and how the autonomy kind of protects them if the local governance doesn't affect change. So if either party is unwilling to have a congregational meeting to insist upon a third-party review, right, then that the next choice tends to be, do we go public with this, or do we encourage people that we're counseling to find another place to worship?
But I think some of the frustration with this is, like, the Southern Baptists did hire outside counsel.
Yeah.
And they got a huge document
that
this happened, and their response was, we're not going to ordain women.
Right. Oh, I was there.
Yeah.
I'm not even SBC, but I was there.
That's
horrible, yeah.
And I think that's the hard part of this, of like, we see it. It's here in black and white, and we are not doing anything about it
I think that's
in
one
a meaningful way.
I think that's one of the motivators for me.
We're like guerrilla fighters here.
One of the motivators for me to say, you can go to the media, but I want to protect you guys too, including you. They might not be worth escalating.
Right.
Right? So if the task force was going to be treated the way we were treated, right, and the DOJ findings were going to be treated with a victory lap rather than lament. Like, I'm fine that the DOJ didn't do criminal activity against the SBC. It's a lot. It takes a lot to criminally charge somebody. Did not bother me in the slightest. What bothered me was leaders who said, see?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. See? It wasn't abusive. And that broke, like, it pained me for people that I love who are great people in the SBC that I adore. Yeah. It pained me. So I want to protect you guys from, you know, charging the gates and then not recognizing that the gates will crush you.
Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is, I mean, there are a lot of watch blogs and, you know, and all those kinds of things out there. There are different routes that you can take. So, I mean, some are more guerrilla warfare than others. You know, so I guess, like, you know, I think it's just important to be really discerning around that.
Yeah.
If you're taking it public in some way. Obviously, we have friends who have taken things public and supported them in that. And so, like, you know, so I don't think that that's always the wrong move, but it's a move that you need to make.
Some have found it very liberating. Others have said to us, it's the worst decision I ever made.
Right.
And I'd like to add, just for anyone else, like, that the people involved in those situations are, like, the special, like, victims would be fine with taking it farther.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think in some situations, it's really careful to, like, to bring people back where they really need distance.
Yeah.
So here's what I would say, a couple things. One is, oftentimes when we are victims and we're in the middle of it and we haven't done our healing, we make decisions that feel really good and feel really important, but have long, the internet is forever.
Yep.
And the other thing I would just say is that, you know, I counsel a lot of women who are in the PCA, actually, my experience with the OPC has been incredible, the pastors I've worked with. I don't know if I just hit the jackpot, but I know the stories, and in the SBC. And what I've just said to them is, you even get to choose whether you want to stay a member or not.
Right.
Right? So you don't have to go fight this big battle if you don't want, and you can always come back to it. So I always say, like, you can go on the internet, but you can't go back off then.
Yeah.
Right? But later, you can always go on. And so for them to just say, for me, I just say, you don't have to fight this big battle now. You can just decide, can I stay in this church? Do I want to? And even if somebody disciplines you wrongly, this is where he was talking so well about, who do you live before? I love the terminology he uses. I use, at whose mercy are you living?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So ultimately, we live at the mercy of the Lord. So even if you choose to leave because you know between you and the Lord in your conscience that this has been sinful, and they discipline you when you leave, you live before the Lord.
Yeah.
God is going to sort that out. And, you know, I was divorced, and one of my big fears was, and so the first year, everybody I met, I would be like, I'm Kirsten Christensen. I was divorced. My husband was unfaithful several times throughout our marriage. You know? Because that's what I thought everybody was going to think. And I really was bugged because I'm the one that had to file, even though he's the one who broke.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Do you know that nobody in 24 years has ever asked me who filed for divorce?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think women feel that big D or that big disciplined or whatever. And just to reassure them, like, everybody is really all about themselves at the end of the day.
Yeah. All right. It is 11:15, so I want to honor our time.
Yeah.
We have really enjoyed being with you guys.
Can we pray over them?
Yes, we will. Some of us will be around for as long as we can after, although there's going to be a plenary and we don't want you to miss that. It's going to be amazing. So take your break, and let me pray for all of us as we dismiss. Father, we love you. We are thankful that you have granted us this opportunity to come together, and just pray that you would, as we leave, some questions are still unanswered, and you know, we know that we know that they will be, but we trust your wisdom and discernment and leadership, the leadership of your Spirit on these people. And so just pray that you would continue to bless them in the work that they do, in the training that they continue to receive, in the wisdom and counsel that they get from your Spirit, but also from other wise biblical counselors and caring people. And so I just pray that you would bless all of the ministries that are here in this room, that you would multiply them. We obviously can see the need as we talk about these things. And so I just pray that the ministries in this room would be multiplied, and that more and more people would receive the care and love and grace and mercy that you offer through, in an embodied way, through other believers. And so I pray that you would just bless their travel and their ministries as we go. We pray in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.